Hello, and welcome to show number 2551 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
Oddly enough, it is way better exercise than I would have ever thought. You're concentrating so much that you forget you're exercising. So by the time I get home, I stow my fencing bag and I go for the shower because I'm wet. I'm just, I'm soaked.
And presumably you've had a good time doing this.
Absolutely. Soaked and happy.
Did she say fencing? Well, let's hear about that. Blind fencing. Wow.
Yes, it can be done. Blind fencing combines orientation and mobility skills in unique ways. We'll talk with Pat Pound, a blind fencer, about techniques, equipment, and safety. She'll explain how fencing parallels using a white cane, share training strategies, and highlight the physical and mental benefits of the sport. But first for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Pat Pound.
My tip of the week would be decide what you want to do, do your research, and then give it a try. Because you never know till you try. And I can't even imagine. Fencing was never on my radar. And, I'm retired and I never thought I would have a new sport at this age, but I do, and I'm having a great deal of fun. And then I'm also really concerned about, making it work for other people. So it's double fun.
And even if it sounds unlikely for somebody with vision loss, like fencing, or we've spoken to people about tennis and surfing, you never know. It might be just the thing for you.
It sure might. And I sure love fencing with my camp kids in particular. It's kind of the highlight of my summer.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Pat.
My name is Pat Pound, and I was born in Far West Texas and was low vision as a child until I was about 14. Went to public school at that time, and then transferred on to the School for the Blind as I lost vision because my little town didn't have any resources for blind individuals at that time. That was, quite an adjustment to have lost vision and need to learn all the blindness skills. But I was around other blind people and had the resources I needed to learn and ended up graduating there, going to University of Texas, later the University of Houston. My degree's in mathematics, and I'd always intended on being a computer programmer, but ended up doing blindness rehab and then disability policy after that. And my last job, I was with the state and was the director of the Governor's Committee on People with Disabilities in Texas.
Are you totally blind now?
Yes.
So you're familiar with all these adaptive aids and canes and dogs and things like that?
Yep, got all that stuff.
Great.
Eyes on Success connects corporate sponsors with visually impaired listeners around the world.
More information about becoming a sponsor can be found at www.sponsor.eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is blind fencing. That may sound scary, but Pat will explain how it is both safe and fun.
Well, Pat, today we wanted to talk to you about a sport which I never thought blind people would get involved in before, and it is fencing. So, touche, tell us how you got involved in fencing.
I'll be happy to. I did some work for Guide Dogs for the Blind, volunteer work, because they were working on legislation that they had passed in California about people claiming their pets were service dogs when they were not. And they wanted to replicate that in Texas. And I've had a fair amount of experience. So they asked for my help. So I agreed. So there, one of the staff people named Rabia Dow was here and introducing me to some of the people that I would need to work with that he knew. And we were waiting on a meeting with some friends of mine in the blindness world to sort of bring them up to date on this issue. And he happened to say, oh, by the way, you might like to know this, because he had learned that I was fairly active in sports and stuff. And he said, I'm a fencer. In fact, not only was a fencer, I am a fencer, but I was also a fencing coach. And you know the connection between orientation and mobility, don't you? And I went, no. I don't know anything. I didn't know that was possible. How did you do it? And fencing had never been on my radar. Of course, I don't think there was a fencing club where I grew up. And so he proceeded to explain to me. And it turns out that Father Carroll, who, of course, the Carroll Center is named after, was part of the group that invented orientation and mobility. He was a fencer. And I believe one other person in that group was also a fencer. So it's not an accident that orientation and mobility and fencing complement one another.
And I guess part of the point there is that in terms of mobility, one important aspect is to know where you are at all times. And that's probably important in fencing also.
Absolutely. Where you are, where you want to go, how to get there quickly and efficiently. Because you think about it, you know, out on the street, you don't have a lot of time to make a decision.
Right, right.
Now, in fencing, you're going toward a target. You know, on the street, you hope you're going away from, you know, in between targets. But the dynamic nature of it is wonderful training. And in fact, the Carroll Center doesn't teach it exactly this way now, because, of course, things change. But when he was there, the fencing instructor, they had a full-time fencing instructor who had taught at MIT. He taught fencing at MIT. So it was fully integrated in their O&M department. So if someone was, for example, veering as they crossed the street consistently, they would just all look at the fencing coach and they said, we'll take care of it. And they did. It's a lot of it is body alignment. It's really fine-tuned body alignment, and then being able to make quick decisions based off of that initial body alignment while you're still hearing things and doing things and changing, you know, making many changes as you go. And there are some movements, like parries in fencing are a lot like how we make a white cane go back and forth. It's just fencing swords are up in the air and canes are on the ground.
So you talk about body alignment and the different orientation between the white cane and the sword in fencing. Can you describe to people who have never seen it what fencing involves?
Okay. Fencing involves two people, and then there's they're called bouts. There's a third person that's a referee, but two contestants. They stand facing one another. And then when they come on guard, which is your initial stance for fencing, your dominant foot is out in front and your front foot is more behind and to the side. And then you turn your body about 3/4 of the way to the side, because that gives the other person less target to hit you. So the point in a fencing bout is you want to touch the other person with your sword. You don't have to touch them hard. You don't have to touch them. And so then the referee will call halt and they will announce who got that particular hit. And then they help you, as in blind fencing, they help you realign, or you realign yourself. And if you're not realigned, they will help you adjust to start again.
So I tried fencing a few times as a teenager, and my recollection is that there's something padded at the tip of the sword, so you're not going to skewer anybody, and that you said you're all covered up with clothing, but this is, you know, padded protective gear with a face mask and the whole smash.
Yeah, it's not small clothing. Most clubs these days start with plastic swords. And in that case, you need to wear long pants, closed-in shoes, and at least a T-shirt, if not a full shirt. And you will be using a plastic mask and a plastic sword. That's partly just because with beginners, it's really hard to stock all the sizes of all the gear you need for metal swords. And plastic gives people a way to try it out without having to learn everything about all the gear. And then once they learn and they decide they really want to fence for real, then they get issued all the gear. And there's a lot of stuff. And the mask for plastic swords are plastic. The mask for the metal swords are metal. They're very tough. You wear a glove. You wear a chest protector. You wear arm protector because you have one arm stuck out more in front. The other arm's behind you. You wear a heavy jacket over that. And, yeah, there's a lot to it. And, you know, then you have to take care of all that equipment, take care of your sword. So there's maintenance along the way. But it does protect you. Our swords have a little ball kind of on the end. It's not a sharp point at all. And in fact, the plastic swords, the end of them actually bends. And no school that we've been at has been uptight about the plastic swords because we just show them how much they bend.
So when you're blind fencing, you primarily use the plastic swords?
Well, we start there, but we certainly don't stay there.
And what is the difference between using a plastic sword versus a metal sword?
Well, of course, metal's quite a bit heavier. I find it easier to tell where I am on my sword and where, like, if the swords clash, which you hope they do, because that helps gives you an idea of where your opponent is, you need to figure out where on their sword, is it middle or toward the guard or toward the point of the sword on each, your blade and their blade.
Can you hear the difference?
No, you can more feel the difference. Sometimes you can hear the difference a bit. But also you need to do this like lickety-split. And that's the hard thing. If I could fence in slow motion, I would be a grand fencer because I know what I want to do. I usually don't know it necessarily as quickly as I need to know it.
Now, you talked about part of the point being to touch the other person. I was under the impression that this was done electronically, like they had metal contacts on their bodies, and when the sword touched that, some light went off, and the referee could tell who touched who. Is that the way it's done or not?
There are unofficial bouts. In classes, usually you don't dress up in all that gear. And in plastic, the referee just calls it by vision. You know, they just watch and they call it score on the left, score on the right, that kind of thing. But as you move on into competitive fencing or on up in your fencing club, they have like reels that have cable coming out that are electric, and it runs up from the bottom of your jacket up and then down through your right arm, and it plugs into the guard of your sword. So that way it is electronic and it shows up on a scoreboard. And it's easier for, because sometimes there's double touches too. You touch it at the same time. But sometimes there's close double touches. So you thought it was double, but really one was before the other. And they can tell all that with the electronics. We also have what we call buzz boxes. There's a way to fix a small electronic piece onto the sword without having the wires so that you still are able to get the electronic. You get a sound when you hit and you get a light, but you don't have to mess with the wires in that case. I find that much easier, but of course the official stuff, like if you go on into competitive fencing, they all fence with the cables and stuff. But most fencing clubs don't do that every night.
And how does one win a bout? Is it like the first one to touch their opponent 10 times, or what happens?
Yeah, officially it's 15 touches. You fence up to 15. So whoever gets to 15 first.
So you talk about having a fencing group. Do you fence with mixed blind people and sighted people?
I do. Now, my class is all blind people. It's easier to teach blind people in a separate setting. However, I have a very unique situation, but I don't think it's terribly uncommon. It's just I'm glad I have it. My coach has taught people to fence under blindfold ever since he opened his club 40 years ago. And he developed that not in relation to blindness, but in relation to focus. because particularly with kids, the main thing you're battling is whether they're focusing. And so he just started collecting blindfolds and things that would work like that, like handkerchiefs. And he would then ask a kid that was having trouble if they would, or an adult, if they would fence under blindfold. And he would teach them the lesson. They were able to learn it better under blindfold. And then he would take off the blindfold and teach it again. And suddenly they could do it. Well, he's raised up several generations of fencers now. And they think fencing under blindfold is like creates a superpower. I mean, they like it. They want to do it. So I go in the summer, they do camps with kids. And so they love to fence under blindfold, and they will even skip some of their fun games that they do and stand on a line to fence me. And I never thought I would see that. I mean, what a way to have an understanding about blind people while you're doing a sport you love.
When you talked about people having difficulty focusing and therefore they put on a blindfold, you meant focusing in the sense of paying attention to what they're doing, not in the sense of seeing things as a sharp image.
Correct. Thank you for clarifying that. Yes.
Earlier, you talked about one of the benefits of fencing is to hone your mobility skills. And so it's clear you know where your own body is. How do you know where the opponent's body is?
Well, the fact is you don't always. But the other fact is just because you can see it doesn't mean you know what they're doing either, because it moves fast. And so you do everything you can do to give yourself whatever advantage you can. I always know certain things about fencers. Like we had this young guy, high schooler, that he would always jump backwards because that was just one of his strategies. He wanted to be further back and then come. Well, actually, he charged forward quickly and then immediately jump backwards. Well, I would always step to the side, wait till he did his thing, and then go after him when I heard his jump backwards.
Oh, interesting. So you could hear him moving. You know what he was going to do next based on history.
Yeah, but it's not always common. I got asked at a conference once, is it more tactile techniques or hearing techniques? And I said, for me, it's more tactile because you key off of the sword contact, and sometimes you're hunting for their sword. So you go out and you do little bitty circles with the end of their sword. Well, they're little bitty on your wrist, but by the time the movement's out to the end of the sword, it's much bigger.
How long is one of these swords? I mean, you've got your arm sticking out. That's a couple feet long.
I would say it's about 3 foot or 3.5 foot.
So I guess in general, you're reasonably far apart, right? Because you don't want to be right on top of the other person all the time.
Right. So you start at the guard line. The official fencing piece, which is what you fence on, is about 40 foot long and 6.5 foot wide. And you can use all that space. When you start, though, there's a horizontal line at each end. And so your foot is behind that line. In Europe, they actually have a raised strip down the middle of the piece. And their rule is 1 foot has to stay on each side of that strip. So you can't put both feet, you know, on one side. We're not real fond of that here, and we haven't done that. We don't think it's necessary. And actually, it becomes more of a challenging sport without it. And the rehab programs that are doing it, which is primarily the Carroll Center, they start with touching swords. So your swords are crossed about 3 inches at the top.
And I guess you have the 6 foot width, but you can both go up and down the 40 foot length of your area?
Correct.
Are there places where you're not allowed to hit people, or there's a penalty if you hit them in the face or something?
Well, there's each sword has its own part of the body that counts as a touch. So there's three swords. There's the foil, the épée, and the saber. They're a little bit different. The foil is the lightest weight, and the target for that is the hardest. It's only the torso. And that's actually what was originally used at the Carroll Center. I think now they're using the épée instead of the foil. But I think the reason it was chosen at that time is it creates the greatest degree of accuracy because it's the smallest target. So, you know, if you're planning for O&M, you want to be as accurate as you can be, et cetera.
So you wouldn't get a point if you hit someone's arm, for example.
Correct. So the épée is the easiest because it's the whole body. I mean, you can touch their big toe and you get a point. And sometimes it's accidental. I mean, you're going for something and you don't know where you're going to hit. And in fact, one technique is you must ask where you hit. If you're not sure where you hit somebody, and it's often that you're not sure, you know, you hit them, but you're not sure where you hit them. But you need to know that because for your own body alignment and that kind of stuff. So that's part of the feedback that we incorporate in blind fencing is you always let the person know where they hit you.
So after a touch, is there like a little break or does the action just immediately continue?
They call the point. So the referee will say, touch on the left, and then they'll have you get back to your starting place, whether you were touching swords or whatever scheme you're using, you start again.
So you described the target for the foil and the épée. What about for the saber?
The saber is a different sword, and it evolved from people who were warriors on horseback. So the target for saber is everything waist and above. So you get half of what you got on épée. And then the movement of the blade, normally you touch with the end of the blade, but the saber sword is made such you're going to touch with the side of the sword. You don't touch with the end on saber, or you can, but the point of the saber is more of a whacking motion.
So for some of our blind listeners who might consider doing fencing, have you ever been hurt? Can you assure people that it's not a dangerous thing to do?
I've not been hurt. If you do something ill-advised, like you're supposed to have your non-dominant hand tucked away behind you, if you choose not to do that, that hand isn't covered up and you have a potential of getting hurt. I've seen people try to fence in shorts, and that's totally against all the fencing rules that there is. You should never fence in shorts.
So basically what you're saying is if you're careful and you wear the right protective clothing, this is a pretty safe sport and can be a lot of fun even for someone who can't see.
Yes, you do have to mind some rules. Like our rule at our club and every club I've ever known of is if you're not fencing and don't have an instruction to do something else with the tip of your sword, it is pointed down at all times.
Well, that's good. You have rules designed to keep people safe. So you said you've never been injured. How long have you been fencing without an injury?
I've been fencing 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much once a week for a couple hours. And oddly enough, it is way better exercise than I would have ever, ever, ever thought. And you're concentrating so much that you forget you're exercising. So by the time I get home, I stow my fencing bag and I go for the shower because I'm wet. I'm just, I'm soaked.
And presumably you've had a good time doing this.
Absolutely. Soaked and happy.
That's a great way to come home.
Yep.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about blind fencing and how to contact Pat Pound about it.
Well, Pat, if people are interested in trying out fencing sometime, are there places where people can find blind fencing groups or organizations?
Well, you can always post a question on the Facebook group called U.S. Blind Fencing Community. You may get a good response there. You can Google fencing in your home area. Fencing is a small sport, but I would Google it. Now, there are historical fencers that are more like what you see at Renaissance fairs, or I would call them theatrical fencers. That's not fencing. That's a whole different kind of thing. And so you can progress on and you can competitively fence if you want. Fencing has been very integrated so that if you're a wheelchair fencer, you can enter in a competition at your club and whoever draws your number fences you, whether they're a wheelchair fencer or not. So they have to learn how to do that.
If people had questions for you, is there a way they can contact you?
Certainly. My email is Pat, P-A-T, Pound, that's my last name, P-O-U-N-D, the number 1010 at gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook under Pat Pound in Austin, Texas. And that's probably the best two ways. Actually, email is probably the best way.
And is there anything special in a coach that people should look for, or can any coach help out a blind person, do you think?
Well, I would ask if they're interested in doing it. My coach has written an introductory course about coaching blind people. And if they want to call me, I can lead that coach to how they find that. It's hosted by the U.S. Fencing Coaches Association online. It's a pay course. And so they can't just go, you know, browse and look at it. You have to like do it. But it's not like a multi-class thing. It's a, you know, probably a couple hour kind of practice. But a lot of it is, you know, understanding blind people and knowing the kind of things that they need to do. And that's, you know, most coaches have not coach blind people, but we can help out. So just give us a call and we'll get you as hooked up as we can get you. Some communities are not going to have clubs, but just keep looking and maybe you'll find them.
Well, those sound like some useful resources to at least get people going and finding out a little bit more if they're interested in participating in such a sport.
Great.
Do you have any words of advice for somebody wanting to try blind fencing?
It's a young sport, and I guess that's why my, you know, why I'm concerned about getting the word out is the Carroll Center is still doing it. So when people go there, they learn it, but there's not a lot of coaches that know about it. And that's why my coach has done the course and he's into writing a book now. That's going to take out the fear. I spent my first year of wanting to do it, trying to find a coach and a club that would even talk to me. So you have to be pretty persistent about finding it. But at least we have some tools for you now. So, you know, you have something to offer a coach that never has done it.
Yeah, cool.
Well, if you have some more questions for Pat or you want to find out more about blind fencing in the U.S. or in Europe, we'll have that information in the show notes for episode 2551.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about radio reading services in the digital age. Evan Starnes, a blind audio producer at AfterSight, the radio reading service for the state of Colorado, turned a childhood fascination with sound into a career in accessible media. We'll talk with Evan about his work on podcasts like Blind Level Tech, the evolution of radio reading services, and how tools like Audacity empower blind creators to produce engaging content. And then the following week, we will end the year by playing excerpts from an interview Evan did of us talking about the history and highlights of Eyes on Success, now finishing its 15th year.
And we're happy to say that Eyes on Success was one of the inspirations for Evan getting involved in radio reading services. So join us for those couple of episodes in the next 2 weeks.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.